Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. How's it going tonight? Hey, this is Sam, host of Open, formerly known as Against Green. And we are going to be working on my wallapini while we chit-chat today. What is a wallapini, you might ask? That is a year-round underground greenhouse. Because I don't know about y'all, but things are getting a little messy out there. Things are getting a little messed up. The prices for everything is skyrocketing. I was actually watching a really interesting TikTok today of this guy talking about fixed rate mortgages and what there was a couple of terms. And to put it nicely, things are going to be getting pretty messed up here with the banks very, very soon. There's going to be a lot of people losing their homes. Really soon, there's going to be a lot of people losing a lot of things here. Really soon. The banks really, they really got a one over on a lot of people here this last while, and things are going to be getting pretty messy. So, will we be okay? I have no idea. At this point, I've got no clue. Busting ass this next little while to make sure that I have some money to cover it, because I kind of don't want to lose my acreage if at all possible. I've invested too much time and effort into this place. Got a massive ass garden that I just don't want to let go yet. And today, I am in the middle of my wallapini again. I started it last year. Didn't get around to finishing it. Whenever you need them to jump, I was just kind of hoping that, you know, a little bit more people would be available than were actually available. But you know what? It's all good. Nobody died in the process. This is for making cob. Too bad I can't live stream this right now, because I think that would be really, really neat. Yeah, it's probably your dad. I think it would be neat to be able to live stream this right now. So what I'm doing right now while we chit-chat today, yeah, we'll grab the sand right away, is I'm making a cob mixture, and this is made of straw and sand, not dirt, clay. You got to use clay, because clay is like nature's cement, and when it's like nature's cement, it's kind of like dirt, but it's not dirt, it's clay, it's different. It breaks in there, yep. So, no, that's an oak tree. So, no, we'll just pull it. There's more than enough that we have. Anyway, so what we're going to be doing, yeah, that's clay, is we take two parts sand, and we mix some straw and water in with it. And then you make almost kind of like a cement. I'm doing this with my kids right now. Trying to do a live radio show with my kids while I'm doing cobbing. If only I could live stream like this right now, this would be super awesome. Okay. Well, are you guys helping or are you guys headed out? Okay. Well, I'll get you to start making your own cob. Go get some water with your dad. We need a bucket of water. Go get a bucket of water. Please. Guys, chill. All right. So anyway, do two parts sand, one part clay, and mix the straw in the water. And straw kind of acts like rebar. You know what? I don't know if we'll be doing this today. These mosquitoes are absolutely atrocious. I don't have any bug, though. Then you mix it together and you make like a... I mean, I would say like cement, but I mean, you could build it even without cement. It just kind of makes like, it's like a really thick mud. Thick mud, and then you can make walls with it. Right now, I'll have to show you guys pictures at some point, but we're using straw bale, and we're making cob, and we're encasing the straw bale in with cob, and this is going to make it so that we can have some heat that is kept within the wallapini throughout the year. So we've got a couple inches of layer of cob all the way around. We're laying it on a cob base. and then we're going to be framing. Yes, and then we're going to be framing it in with windows on the south side, because you want to get as much sunshine as you can as possible. I don't know where y'all are from, but if you check on things like Craigslist on in the States, or like Kijiji or Facebook or stuff, depending on your area, I'm finding out that apparently in Texas, you know, these kinds of things are a little more aesthetic and they go for a lot of money. But where I'm from, people are just throwing away old windows like it's nobody's business. So it's very easy, depending on where you are, to get your hands on old windows. So you have old windows. We're going to have old windows lining the south end and some of the east and west end. And on the north end, it's going to be slanted from the south down to the north side. So the south side is going to be taller, and the north side is going to be shorter. It's going to be earth sheltered on the north side. And we're going to encase it once I'm done cobbing and everything. We're going to plaster it in lime to help seal the deal, so to speak. And then on the north wall, I'm going to be painting it black to also help retain that heat. And in the middle, I'm going to be putting a stove, which is also made of rocket stoves. It's so next level. Rocket stoves are kind of like fancy wood stoves. When it sucks the air in, they're built wood, but it was supposed to be built for places that don't have as much wood available or anything that's burnable available. That didn't have electric heat kind of thing. I'm not very good at describing aesthetics here, but the front end, it goes down. Goes down towards the ground, I guess one could say. It's a pipe that goes down, and then it comes up and then feeds into like a giant. Throw the other tubing. So normally it would burn and then it would go up into a chimney peak. Don't do that because you're wasting dirt. I need that. Anyway, it would go up through the chimney, and then it, like normal wood stoves, you put the wood in, it burns, and then it goes up through the chimney. Now, rocket stoves, they burn everything twice. Because the air kind of sucks into the stove, and it burns hotter than a regular stove, you don't have to burn as much. It's slower burning, but it burns hotter, if that makes sense. It's kind of like... When, if you've never heard a rocket stove, like I would encourage you to go over to YouTube, but if you've ever had like a wood stove and you've kind of closed the door like three quarters of the way, or you just left like a centimeter or like a half an inch of space open, and it sucks that air in and it whooshes like that, it's like that. Then it goes up into the burn chamber. So it burns the wood, then it goes up into this burn chamber and it burns it again, so to speak, because it's burning so hot, it burns it again. And then you take the piping and you put it into like some cob furniture or something, like a cob couch or, you know, I mean, a chair or something. And you put like some giant stones and stuff in this cob furniture. And it acts like a radiator because it's that transfer of heat. There's words and stuff like this. I'm not very brainly thinking smart when it comes to these kinds of words. I'll think about them after. This is a problem I have. I love to, when I hear the word, I can't find it, but like 2 hours later, I'll remember it. It's so silly. Anyway, it acts like a radiator. Geothermal. There we go. Geothermal heat. And the rocks heat up. The cob heats up. And between the wood stove, the rocket stove, and the cob furniture, it makes heat for hours. Depending on how big you build it and how well you build it, it'll warm up a space. Oh, my goodness. It'll warm up a very big space. Let's put it that way. I can't come up with cubic meters or anything like that. That's just too beyond my capacity to think. But it'll heat a fairly big space, and it'll keep it warm for a long time. So when you're looking at things like, especially in northern hemispheres and stuff, you know, if you're looking to save on wood and keep something warm for a long time, but stalking the fire every few hours, or help, depending on, you know, I wouldn't say 12 or I wouldn't say 24, because that's a bit of a stretch, depending on how you build it, really. But it'll keep you warm for a long time. This is the whole thing with, you know, science, where science is evolving and it's doing some amazing stuff. Huh? Okay. I don't know what's taking so long to get a single bucket of water. Oh. There's like three by the pool. Some mice wrecked my straw bale on me. This is not good. It's molding down here. Fudgicles. Not impressed right now. Not impressed. Of course. Whatever. This is what I get, I guess. So that's what I'm going to be working on today. If these mosquitoes don't, you know what? I think I might have to get bad. I had an army of dragonflies here the other day. But now they're just kind of on vacation. Today would be great. You know what? I might just have to scrap these plants for today. I'm alive out here, and this is just driving me nuts. I'm going to head back inside here, guys. I'll do Wallapini tomorrow. Okay, well, you can go bring it over there. Because these mosquitoes are bad, and it's driving me nuts. So I'll do this tomorrow. Well, guess what? Plans change. Yeah, well, I just got hit by a mosquito on my freaking eyelid, so I'm going to look like the hunchback. I'm going to look like the Hunchback of Notre Dame here right away. Quasimodo coming to you. Jeez. So I'll do some Wallapini stuffing tomorrow. Because I got to replace some of the bales. Because the bales are all molded out on a couple of the bottom side, and I don't want that. So to heck. Unfortunately, things did not quite work out the way I wanted them to, so it is what it is. Let's go check out some stuff on the news. Turn off this computer. I'm not listening to Feed and Grow Fish for 10 hours. Okay. All right. Let's break on my computer, and we're going to go over some new stuff. I got these mosquitoes on my knees. How annoying. So apparently the new Threads app is out. Haven't heard a lot of good things about it, which is fortunate and unfortunate. Getting so tired of these fucking ear duct posts. Let's see. Carolyn Borisenko. God, this bitch just needs to get off the internet. Been over. I'm just heading over to Reddit. I haven't read some Reddit posts in a while. I've barely even touched the computer for a while. Oh, I guess we're not bailing tomorrow. Apparently the swath we had. Holy smokes. So last week, you guys, while I upload this stuff, last week it was absolutely freaking insane. We had one hell of a windstorm come through. Felled trees all over the place. It was really bad just north of here. And I'm really sad because we had all our swaths. We do baling for animals, and then my brother sells bales, so I sell bales for him. And we had all our swaths ready to go. Everything was going to be perfect. All our baling was going to be done in like 3 days. And this rainstorm came through, and it blew everything away on us. I was so unimpressed. And like all the farmers that had also done fresh cutting, all of them around here, they like lost so much money if they had just been doing fresh cutting and hadn't been baled yet. Kids are falling apart. This is a rank one. Here we go. My computer would load today. That would be great. I feel like I've been sitting here for 10 minutes already just waiting for it to load. Here we go. Am I the asshole for telling my sister to pound sand and she doesn't know anything? Well, that depends. Let's see how this goes. My wife gave birth a month ago. His name was Colby. His name is Colby, not was, is alive. Is Colby, and he's perfect. My wife and I are obviously tired, but very fulfilled and loving every moment of parenthood. However, my wife does get a bit pissed whenever my sister contacts us or comes by to see the baby. It's only my sister and no one else. When I ask my wife about it, she just says she can't stand her. Weird, because she didn't mind my sister before, even now, even upon hearing my sister's voice or seeing her car in the driveway, sets my wife right sideways. Up until today, though, I had no idea why. So my sister shows up earlier, and as I said, it sets my wife off. She goes into the bedroom with her son. Now, my wife is very non-confrontational. The only time she ever says anything is when she's pushed well beyond her breaking point. Well, my sister starts talking to me like normal or whatever and didn't even mention my wife or Colby. I go to the restroom maybe 20 minutes later, and when I return, I hear my wife becoming snappy. Takes you 20 minutes to go to the bathroom, dude? What? My sister was now in my bedroom. As I approached the door, I heard my sister say, "You need help, Clara. Just let me help you." Now, I have no idea what's going on at this point, so I walk in and ask, "What the fuck is going on?" Because my wife's face is beet red. Well, my wife puts Colby in his crib, pushes us out of the room, and shuts the door, and this is when she unleashes. She says something to the effect of, "Your fucking sister seems to think I have PPD. Your sister seems to think that I need to hand the baby over to her and go check myself into the hospital because apparently she knows what PPD feels like, even though she's never carried a child or given birth. My sister is infertile, adopted my niece 13 years ago. My sister starts crying, says she can see the signs and is just trying to help. Starts telling me to open my eyes. My wife does not show signs of PPD. She's literally overjoyed with being a mom. So I told her to pound sand that she doesn't know anything and to get out and never return. And then, in the heat of the moment, said she is no longer allowed around our son because I don't trust her to not kidnap him. Harsh word vomit. She leaves. Crisis diverted. All goes back to normal, but my mom called flipping out because of how we treated my sister to make out like she was less of a mom because she's adopted, or she adopted. Okay. Not the asshole. Your sister needs help. I wouldn't trust her on the baby either. Exactly what I was thinking. The entire give her the baby is completely unhinged. I'd keep her away from my child, too. Not the asshole. Even if your wife did have PPD, you aren't dead, and it would be the obvious caregiver for the child while your wife got treatment. Your sister is stirring up shit. You were right to cut off contact. Ah. No, well, I wouldn't say that he's the asshole for telling her to leave, essentially. Having been would have loved to have had somebody come over and offer to take the kid while I got some sleep. I mean, my biggest problem having had postpartum depression is that I just didn't get any sleep. My kid had colic really badly. And there were points where she would wake up. She was supposed to be sleeping every 10 to 20 minutes and cry or nurse. And when you go for 3 to 5 days straight, waking up every 10 to 20 minutes, you tend to go a little bit crazy. Everything it managed to pull my through. I managed to pull myself out without any sort of formal help. My entire life is completely different. But no, I don't really suffer with issues that I used to because I've been spending a lot of time doing a lot of soul work and those kinds of things. However, like I said, anybody or their dog come over and offer to take the baby while I went and got some sleep, that would have been great. That would have been absolutely, that would have been life-changing. That's all I'm going to say. Life-changing. I'm good. Like, there's nothing I require any sort of formal help for. I pretty much got everything good and sorted on my own. Everything is great on this end. And getting better on the daily. That's the best part, is things are getting better on the daily. Everything is just, you know, shit happens, life happens, and it is what it is. But it's getting to be a life that I'm really enjoying having, if that makes sense. So, while I would say that in this particular situation, that to a degree, he is not the asshole. I'm also going to say, just be careful, because a lot of moms have postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety, and they don't want to disclose it, because people like the sister, where they're saying, go get help, is she going to fucking call? That's my concern. Is she going to call somebody on her? Because, like, when they come snatch your kid, they don't give your fucking kid back. And that's the number one reason why women don't get help with things like postpartum depression. Because the system doesn't actually help you. It is very dangerous to postpartum women. And people can say, well, that's kind of heavy to say. No. Hear me out. Having worked with postpartum, you know, having been a birthing mom, being a doula, I was going for my postpartum doula certifications and things like that before I just kind of quit thinking birth workers were kind of fucking crazy. Not only are you having to deal with navigating birth, which is such a raw and vulnerable experience. And depending on what kind of baggage you have when it comes to birth, you could have trauma from childhood that could affect your birth and postpartum. You could have current situations. You could have not so great physical health. You could have not so great mental health. You could have not so great emotional health, spiritual health. You know, there's so many aspects when it comes to childbirth, that like being a pregnancy labor doula is so unbelievably insane. Because like not every birthing woman is going to be okay with every doula either. Like you have also the personality conflicts. You have the business model conflicts. There's so many things. So like, having to help a woman navigate, and that's not even talking about things like, you know, a traumatic birth. Those are just next level. Those are absolutely next level. And I've been privy to both. And it's tough shit. It is tough shit. And on top of that, you have the medical complex where depending on how you work with them and what their ideals are, that might be another hurdle that you have to go through. Too many times you watch these women be abused by the medical complex when they're like, oh, we're just trying to help you. No, the fuck you're not. You just pulled out her placenta and gave her hemorrhage. Like, why didn't you just leave it come out on its own? You're sitting there pulling on it, and then you don't want to let her leave. She's got to stay an extra few days because her blood count is so low because she hemorrhaged on the table because you couldn't wait 5 minutes. The fuck? Things like that. I could go on days about this shit. Days. And then finally, in the birth world, even in these so-called alternative birth workers, you have horizontal violence. You have all these things going on. And it's incredibly frustrating because you have these Captain Save-A-Ho doulas that want to take it up the ass with legislation and regulation, and we need to protect women because we need to regulate ourselves. And like, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I can see where they're coming from when it comes to having a certain set of standards that some people practice for the money, some people practice for the ego, and when you've got money and especially ego intertwined when it comes with situations like this, you end up with people being hurt. And we're not just talking about like, you know, fucked up property where like, oh, you didn't build the shed right or something. We're talking about bodies. Spiritual beings in a body here, and you screw that up and you could fuck them up for life, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You don't want to screw that up. And sometimes things go wrong, not very often, like 85% of women out there will have births, no care provider needed, so to speak. There's no interventions needed, no help needed. And like 10% of the 85%, you know, the percent will need some sort of help, some sort of intervention. And then 5% are not great. Things really aren't great. And those are the ones you really need the hospital for. And when you've got the birth workers that, you know, have that ego, you have issues. Now, coming back to mental health and postpartum, our postpartum care services fucking suck. They're virtually non-existent. Because number one, no government will actually make, here in Canada and the United States, there's things in the UK and France and stuff, they have that stuff over there. Here, not so much. It's all privatized, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I'm not going to sit here and advocate that the government needs to do all the work when people can do all the work too. And some can choose to do it free or things like that where it's family members. You have cultures with family members, like, you know, Indian families, like East Indian families, where, like, they take care of you for a whole month. Asian families, same thing. They actually have a culture of postpartum care. Even around here, like, the Mennonites have a culture of postpartum care. You know, mom will come out and stay with you for a couple weeks up to a couple months. Just so that, like, especially if you've got other little kids, you know, you're going to need some help. And having done that and having had a two-year-old and having been on my own for pretty much, because my husband went back to work, like I had the baby and he was back to work on Monday. So I was pretty much rocking that shit on my own, which was also really tough. I made it through. So I can completely empathize any woman out there struggling with mental health. In certain aspects, I mean, if there's other compounding incident, like any issues, like, you know, bipolar or anything like that, oh, that's, oh my God, like, I have nothing but the utmost empathy that you're going through this roller coaster of hormonal emotions and physical changes and this identity dynamic that you've just shifted through on top of having the, I want to say it's like, you know, you're already like behind because you've already got these pre-existing issues. So it's like on one hand, I want to say you're not the asshole because she's being very pushy about the postpartum care. She's being very pushy about getting help. And she's being very pushy because she hasn't truly experienced what it's like to give birth. She has obviously adopted, so she does know what it's like to be a mom in other aspects, but, like, at the same time, it's like you're the asshole because she's trying to genuinely care about you and your wife. You know what I mean? It's just, like, it's such a sticky dynamic because it's just, like, you know, on one hand, she's obviously not reading the signs that, like, y'all are good. But on the other hand, it's just like, be thankful that she gives a shit. That's all I'm going to say. Be thankful that she gives a shit. Because there are too many people out there that don't give a shit and they don't want to help you. Like I said, like when I was struggling, I would post on Facebook and the only thing I ever got from the majority of people, with like from everybody, was like, oh, you're tough, but you're a tough mama. You'll make it through. It's like, I don't need to be tough and make it through. I need fucking sleep. I've been waking up every 10 minutes and collectively I've gotten 4 hours of sleep broken up over a 24-hour period in which I was woken up every 10 minutes for 3 days straight. I don't need to be tough. I need fucking sleep. Because it's like the walls are melting, bro. Like, I'm literally starting to see shit. Like, I'm not tripping you, man. Like, I'm starting to see things that I don't want to see. It's like I'm starting to think things that I don't want to think. I'm starting to feel things that I don't want to feel. I need help. And I never got it. And that was so frustrating. Because people judge the shit out of you when you experience those kinds of things. And then God forbid you actually, like, give in to those thoughts and you do something. Then everybody's like, oh, she should have, you know, I mean, there's going to be the one dynamic of people that are going to be shitting on you and be like, oh, she's just crazy, you know, why, how could she possibly do that? Your mind is literally hell. Your mind is literally hell. And if you haven't experienced that, I can't begin to tell you how fucked up it is to experience that, having been there. It's like, I look back now, all I can think to myself, like, how the hell could you have possibly even contemplated those things? Like, how could you have ever? And it's like, but I did, though. You know what I mean? So any moms that are listening out there, or anybody that are dads or aunties or uncles or grandmas or grandpas or just friends, child or childless, it doesn't matter. Just know, like, postpartum periods are fucking tough, especially now. Especially now when we are in a depression that is worse right now than the Great Depression. Like, you can Google how much the average Joe was making, and, like, the comparison, like, right now, for the man, like, for somebody who's making just, like, you know, a single fucking man, they would be making, like, $88,000 a year. We're making $35,000. You know what I mean? It's just, like, the price of everything has gone through the roof. The money has not followed suit. And now we've got more political restrictions that we've had even before the Civil War. Like, I mean, they fought a war over this shit because they were tired of the king coming up, you know, the United States. They fought a war over this because they were tired of the king and the rules. Like, the rules we have now, like, anybody back then would just roll over and die. Because it's just insane what we have now. But, yeah, like I said, just know, like, when you've got a woman in the postpartum period, ways you can help her, cook her a fucking meal. Take the baby so she can sleep. Or hell, let her sit with the baby and come over and do her dishes. Let her go sleep with the baby and then you come over and do the dishes and the laundry. Because a lot of moms, they're like, oh, the baby's sleeping. I have time now to go do the laundry. Well, if you take care of the laundry, and I'm not saying, like, you need to do these things, but, like, if you care about postpartum moms and you see one that's struggling, I'm going to tell you right now, like, that is going to make the world of difference to just be able to get a couple hours of just nothingness in your head. It's going to be just, it's, yeah. So, moving on to the next one. Am I the asshole for leaving a family vacation early because my husband and I were expected to sleep in different beds? What? What the hell? For my father-in-law's 58th male birthday this year, my mother-in-law, 57 female, planned a weekend-long trip with their four children. Edit, my husband is the second oldest and their respective partners. They rented out a nice house near the beach, and the cost for the Airbnb was split equally between the attending couples. My husband, 31, and I, 29, oh, they're both men. Okay. My husband, 31 male, and I, 29 male, drove down there this week, and when we arrived in our edit pre-assigned room, we were surprised to find two single beds. Okay. At first, we shrugged it off and figured we could simply push them against each other, but we quickly found out the headboards of the beds were drilled to the wall. Edit, the headboards were attached to both the wall and the bed frame. I assume it's to prevent renters from moving beds and possibly damaging flooring, etc. I asked my mother-in-law why she had chosen a house that didn't have enough double beds to hold all the couples that were invited, and she told me to stop making a fuss because it wasn't that big of a deal. Huh? I then asked why she hadn't mentioned it beforehand, and she rolled her eyes at me, saying that I was overdramatic, a walking stereotype, and that me not clinging to her son for a little while might be for the best. Excuse me? Considering she had made some borderline homophobic comments in the past, she claims they're jokes. Okay. I was quite uncomfortable, and based on her remarks, I felt like she had given the room with the single beds to the only gay couple on purpose. Yeah, she did. You know, your feelings are correct, sir. Your feelings are entirely correct. I said that it wasn't. I said that if it wasn't that big of a deal, surely she and her husband would be happy to switch rooms with us. But she once again told me I should quit making a fuss and walked away from the conversation. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Afterwards, my husband tried talking to his mother, but he wasn't any more successful than I had been at this point. I was reaching my breaking point, so I asked my husband if he'd like to spend our vacation at a hotel, as we'd both taken the week off work anyway. He agreed, and we booked us a room in a hotel a few towns away. My mother-in-law has accused of ruining her husband's birthday and dividing the family because two of my husband's siblings supported our decision. My in-laws and last sibling and the last sibling have been texting me and calling me an asshole for turning my husband against his family and egotistically manipulating the situation. No! No, top comment, not the asshole. Based on her behavior, from what you said, it does sound like she intentionally gave you the gay couple separate beds. You didn't ruin the vacation. Her homophobia did. Oh, big time. Oh, big time. No, she did that on purpose because she can't conceive of the fact that her son is with another man, somebody that he loves, and they're going to be spending the night together. Not asshole. If it was not a big thing, mother-in-law could have taken care of herself. She did that on purpose. You handled that asshole well. Entirely correct. Nope. You are not the asshole. She is most certainly the asshole. He's a grown-ass man who's married to a grown-ass man. Let them have their fucking bed. Are you kidding me? Silly. Let's go over one more here. Ooh. This one looks like it could be. There's a lot of, like, people asking if I'm gay or something. Like, there's a lot of, like, LGBTQ posts. Am I the asshole for making my son clean up after his sister in the bathroom? Let's see. I'm 40s female and have two children. Dax, male 12, and Mia, female 14. Not real names for privacy. Okay, well, that's good. Thank you for not posting the real names. That's actually, I like that. My kids don't get along super well. Dax thinks pretty really funny. I guess like every 12-year-old boy, he annoys Mia with them a lot. It's something my husband and I have been working on as there's many fights between them. I will often recreate what he sees. Most of them are harmless, something like a fake spider in her phone. But this time he went too far. Then I thought it would be funny to put saran wrap over the toilet because before my daughter went to the bathroom, he said he got the idea from online. I don't know if this is a thing, but it was a terrible prank. Basically, he put plastic wrap under the toilet seat so if someone sits on it, well, pretty much it makes a mess instead of going to the bowl. Yeah, I know. Ew. So he does this right before Mia goes to the bathroom to pee. When she gets in and sits on the toilet, like normal pees, and since there's plastic wrap over the hole, her pee collects on it and gets everywhere, all around the ground, on the toilet, and on her. She comes to me crying. She's embarrassed because she's a teenage girl, and it's disgusting. I told me to shower and not worry about the mess. Here's where I might be the asshole. I go to my son and yell at him for what he did. I tell him that that's not an appropriate prank and that he's old enough to know that's not okay. Then I made him clean it up. He starts crying, saying, it's unfair, I make him clean his sister's pee. Boston is going to be sick, he says. It's from her, she should clean it. But it was his fault and literally his mess to deal with. I don't know why I should humiliate my daughter further or why I should have to. I told him the mess was his fault and he should think about the repercussions of his actions next time because this was the prank he caused. Then I sit in the door and watch him as I made him clean all the urine up off the floor of the toilet. I think this is an appropriate punishment considering it's really just natural consequence of what he did, and it doubles in a general lesson on how to clean a toilet, which he has to learn at some point anyway. Well, my husband disagrees. This all happened while he was working, and he got home, Dax complained to him. He told me I was overly harsh on her son and put him in danger by exposing him to germs. Are you? What the fuck? But I gave him some gloves I use when I have to wash the toilet, and it's not like he was unsupervised. But my husband is mad at me and told me I went too far, and that's bad parenting. Of course my son is mad at me, too, but my daughter's on my side. Am I the asshole? Am I a bad mom? No! No. not the asshole, but your husband is, and he can see what, and you can see why Dax thinks it's okay to put that shit on the sister. What the fuck is your husband on about? You put him in danger by exposing him to germs. He cleaned the toilet for sakes. We all do it. In fact, lots of 12-year-olds do it as part of their chores. You should ask your husband if you preferred if he left Dax to mess for him to clean up next time he finishes work in the future. Yeah. Yeah. Son already exposed himself when he decided he wanted to saran wrap the toilet. I mean, there's evidence that poop bacteria spreads all over the washroom once you flush, even if you put down the seat, not the asshole. Oh, too, and including on your toothbrush. On your toothbrush. You have poop particles on your toothbrush. But that's perfectly okay. Nah, your husband is a loser. I'm sorry, he's a loser. You were right. They wouldn't have been pee on the floor if he hadn't played a stupid prank. Your husband should back you up. He isn't doing Dax any good. I'm tempted to advocate for his internet access to be restricted. He has shown using it, and he isn't using it responsibly. By the way, what did your husband think was a suitable punishment, not the asshole? Response to that. Played kind of similar pranks in the past, and we always deal with it by restricting internet games in some way. I'm okay with him doing harmless things like using fake spiders around the house or jumping up from on the wall. Kids will be kids, and some of that my teenager isn't really bothered by. But once it causes something physical, I draw the line. One time he dumped water on her, which, to me, that crosses the line from prank to just being an asshole. She got wet and had to change. It's not a practical joke you can just take back. Well, usually his Xbox for a week and restrict his phone so he can only get text and call and not use apps. But clearly, since he did this, that's not working, and I thought this punishment will be more appropriate. Both of my kids have had parental restrictions on the devices of 13. I think once you're a teenager, you can have your privacy, and that's what I did for my daughter. Right now, my son's phone is still restricted since he's 12. Their games, access websites, apps are blocked, and I can see everything he does on there. But since my son has a specific issue, I might need to keep the restrictions on him longer than I did with his sister. Villain of the house, though. That'll make me the villain of the house. Oh shit. Nah. Dad is the asshole. Because that's just going to teach your daughter that your son can do whatever the hell he wants to her, that she's going to have to pick up for whatever he did to you, and that dad's not going to be on your side. It's all about your son. That's going to be some major favor. You know, let's do one more. Then we'll cut her off. But we'll fucking do something else. We'll go look at some news stories or something. I have not opened up my computer at all this week to get a bunch of stuff done. That did not happen. Like I said, I will be working on my Wallapini here tomorrow. Thankfully, it's going to be nice weather. And, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on over here right now. Oh, boy. Oh, this one looks messy. This one looks messy. Am I the asshole for calling my sister-in-law and brother whores after my sister-in-law insulted both me and my wife? Well, let's check it out. My wife, 34 female, and I, 47 male. Y'all have like a 13-year difference? Okay, I'm not going to judge, but okay. Are staying with my parents, 72 female and 71 male, grandma, 90 female, older brother, 50 male, brother-in-law, 48 male, and their kids, 10 female and 7 male, younger brother, 40 male, sister-in-law, 38 female, and their kids, 9 male, 7 female, 4 male, at a beach house we rented for 2 weeks. I should preface this by saying that, frankly, I do not get along with my younger brother, Todd, and I do not like my sister-in-law, Anne. That said, I am civil with them, and while I don't see them often, I do love my niece and nephews. Yesterday, my wife, Alice, not her actual name, but, and I were babysitting all of our nieces and nephews while my grandma napped and everyone else went to see a movie. Now, once we got here, Alice and I had Now, once we got here, Alice and I baked cookies for everyone to eat. We baked them later in the evening, and Anne, who works as a personal trainer, told her kids that they couldn't have any. The kids were upset, of course, especially since their cousins were allowed cookies, but Anne was insistent that they weren't allowed any at the time. She and Todd are generally quite strict with the kids' diets. None of them have any food allergies, and to my recollection, they have only been allowed a popsicle once this past week. While everyone was out, one of the kids asked Alice if they could have cookies, so we gave them all cookies to enjoy. When everyone came home, Anne asked the kids what they did, and one of them mentioned that we gave them cookies. She then told them to play on the beach, where they were watched by my older brother and brother-in-law while they joined their cousin, and were joined by their cousins. Anne then proceeded to get very mad. She started off saying that we shouldn't have given them cookies because she hadn't said they could have them. Alice started to apologize and say we just wanted to let the kids enjoy their vacation, but Anne interrupted and told her that she didn't trust a fat ass with her kids' health. Holy smokes. Now, I was absolutely livid, and I told her to fuck up. The argument spiraled from there, and at that one point, Anne said she never trusted two psychos with her kids. And I met in therapy 11 years ago, and we were discharged from the hospital for mental health concerns. So I'd like to emphasize we weren't there for anything that would have ever, that would even imply that we put anyone else in danger. I then told her it was rich for two whores to think that they could ever raise morally healthy kids. Anne was originally Todd's best friend's wife. Holy shit. But the two had an affair during which their oldest child was conceived, and Anne and her husband had what sounds like a rather messy divorce. She then started crying and left, and our family is a bit divided over this. I realized that I was very harsh, but so was she, and I did not think her place was a dish out, which she couldn't take. So am I the asshole? Everyone's the asshole. Obviously, Anne is for starting the insult, you and your wife more so for feeding her kids something you know she said not to. She was half right. You proved she can't trust you with her kids. Yes, it was just a cookie this time. But now she knows that if you feel like you'll go against her rules with her kids. No, that's a bit. Somebody responded, lol, OP gave kid a cookie. His sister-in-law calls them fat ass psychos. You think feeding the kid cookies was the bigger asshole move? Lol, this sub. Yeah, no kidding. I'm genuinely shocked by everyone's the asshole. It's a cookie, please. Everyone's the asshole. You don't like your brother or sister-in-law, so you chose to push the kid's rules. Sister-in-law is no better for her insults. Okay, but like, in his defense, if she knew that the kids weren't, why the fuck didn't she provide something that was a different snack for the kids? Like, if you're going to be like that, due to health reasons or whatever, you know, it's your kid, that's your parenting, and we all know how bad things like processed sugar and everything is for your kid, okay? We're not going to discount and say that, like, that's not great. I've talked before in length, and will continue to talk about the dangers of having wheat and processed dairy and all these other things, especially when it comes to store-bought processed food, how bad that stuff is. Especially when you eat it over and over and over again. Once in a while, not that bad. All the time, though, you got problems. But, like, you know they're baking cookies. Why didn't you provide any sort of ingredients or something? It's like, I don't want my kids having those cookies. But here's some other ingredients. Could you make these instead for my kids? Or I don't want my kids eating those cookies. So here, I provided something else for my kids so that they can have this instead. Instead of just being a total asshole and saying, no, no cookies, so these kids get to watch everybody else have cookies, especially when they're like ages between 10 and 4. Or younger brother, 9, 7, and 4. Like, how are you going to explain to a 4-year-old, everybody else gets to have cookies but you? Because your mom is an asshole. That's why. Like, nah. Nah, that's a bit extreme. Oh, that's ESH, is everyone sucks here. So, nah, I'm standing with Dad on this one. Because if she didn't want her kids to have those freaking cookies for whatever reason, she could have provided another option. She got to go to the movies. Oh, I didn't trust you if you're my kid. You got to go to the movies. Your kids had to stay home and be excluded from certain things because next time bring your kids then. Oh, I can't trust you. Well, next time just bring your kids then. Like, that's fine. Don't want me to watch your kids? That's cool. I'll watch everybody else's kids. You can take your kids. In fact, you know, I'm not going to watch your kids at all. You're going to be an asshole like that? That's cool. Not for that. Okie dokie, what's happening on Twitterland today? There's a lot of stuff happening in Twitterland today. None of which I really care for, to be entirely honest. A lot of LGBTQ shit, apparently. Trans-identified male shows off his lactating pumps on TikTok. Just started, and yes, transgenders do lactate. So in previous TikTok video, he also said he wants to give his milk to family so they can breastfeed their children with transgender milk. I'm just going to keep growing. I'm going to keep scrolling on that. Because at this point, women, especially in the United States, are struggling more than enough to breastfeed past 3 months, 6 months. I'm not even going to entertain that shit right now. Biological women are having it tough enough. What the hell? As Quebec gets wetter because climate change, risks of landslides increase. Well, wait a minute. I thought due to climate change, everything was getting drier. I thought due to climate change, we need to up the carbon taxes because the forests are burning. We don't have no rain. Quebec is getting wetter? Ah, interesting. Video of this Mizzy, this live streamer Mizzy, just going into a grocery store and messing everything up, just knocking shit off the shelves, because that's funny, that's cute. Somebody who had a vaccine reaction. Oh, I don't even know if I will look at the news today, you guys, to be honest. This is just giving me a headache. Wait a minute. The United States has destroyed its chemical weapons stockpile? There was something I saw on Twitter today. Or not Twitter, Telegram. Go over to Telegram. We are going to go into... Holy goodness.
asked that a lot.
Really, I think go through and delete some of these channels because I'm in way too many channels. I'm at 81 channels. It's been a little while. Where is Close TV? That's the one we're looking for. This is what I wanted to see. New, 45% of U.S. drinking water is contaminated with, quote, forever chemicals, unquote. That could lead to infertility, cancer, and hormone issues, according to a USGS study. When I saw that today, like, I'm already familiar with the fact that they can't take a lot of your pharmaceuticals out of the water. And if this is news to you, you need to hit Google, like, right now. You need to hit Google, like, right now. Your heart medication, your birth control, your chemotherapy, things like that, can't get out of your water. Because they only take out, like, industrial chemicals, and then they sanitize it. They don't actually take everything out of the water. So when they're doing this, and they filter it through, and then they send it down the river, or they put it in the ground, depending on where you are. A lot of big cities and stuff are located on rivers so that they can send it down the river. You're going to tell me that that doesn't have an effect on everybody who's down the river who's drinking or any of the wildlife that's in the river who, you know, the other wildlife are eating that? Like, you're not going to tell me that that doesn't have a compounding effect? Everybody is freaking out. Still, the scientific community is freaking out still about having too much fish from the ocean because of the mercury levels, or too much fish from the river because, you know, dams and things, the mercury levels. Not one of these fuckers, not one, will talk to you about the dangers of having excess food in your water, because so many people are hopped up on medications, most of which they don't even need, and to be entirely honest, a lot of it has to do with diet, if you just eat the right diet. But that also comes back to what we've talked about a few times on this show, where we need to change our farming practices, because our farming practices, while it's making food, it's great because we're not starving to death. But we're starving for nutrition. So you have all of these ailments that are being brought by food-like products or food stripped of nutrients. And they're on these pharmaceuticals for these things, and then they're pissing that into the water. Nobody's talking about this. On a mainstream scale, the doctors are still telling you don't have too much fish because mercury. Meanwhile, your brain is imploding and having little holes being eaten into it because you don't have the proper omega-3s. But, you know, whatever. We're going to read this article. It's from the Post-Millennium on disclose.tv. 45% of U.S. drinking water contaminated with forever chemicals that lead to infertility, cancer, hormone issues, from report. PFAS exposure may lead to infertility, developmental issues, hormone issues, and certain cancers. Aw, there's no actual article here? Lame. Oh no, we're going to go to the Post-Millennial. That's just, they just RSS that onto their site. Let's go out. In a study released by the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, on Wednesday, harmful per and polyfluorine alkyl substances, PFAS, are estimated to contaminate at least 45% of drinking water in the United States, with most of the concentration near urban areas. According to the USGS, PFAS are synthetic chemicals used in a wide array of commonly used items such as non-stick fry pans, fire extinguisher foam, food packaging products that are grease resistant, and more. They take a long time to break down, are commonly referred to as forever chemicals. 716 different locations across the country and found that 75% of tap water in urban areas and 25% of rural areas with PFAS tested in the tap water. Holy crap! Hold on, guys. Give me 1 minute. I got a call coming in here. I got to take this.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Peter, the Korean films are my letter of recommendation. It is obvious their hearts are a letter of approval from Messiah. Dionysus from the 405 BC play the Baker and Jesus of Nazareth quote the same line, kicking against the pricks. That is plausible, is it not? Am I not an apostle?
Let's study this and more proof that a test of whom we love exists in the New Testament canon. Join Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul, which airs Saturdays noon Pacific, 1 Mountain, 2 Central, and 3 Eastern for 3 hours on Saturdays, where listeners enjoy fellowship and study of the words of Messiah versus yours, Paul. 3195276208. Saturdays at noon Pacific.
Most people say they hate wearing shoes and would go barefoot if they knew they were allowed. People say it all the time on their social medias, but they are worried that someone will say something to them. So everyone wears the cheapest flip-flops with the least amount of fabric on them. Most people do not even know that it's completely 100% legal to go barefoot into a store. Most people think that driving barefoot is illegal, but it isn't. Driving barefoot actually is safer than wearing most shoes. Going outside barefoot for a walk is one of the healthiest things you could do, but most people are afraid someone will say something. Or they quote the myths and the rumors that their grandma told them years ago. The fact is, there are no laws against driving a car, going to a store, or eating in a restaurant barefoot. So don't give in to bad fashion, hurt heels, or a broken flip-flop. For more information, please check out barefootislegal.org or find us on your favorite social media.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website.
Earthing, also known as grounding,
is the act of touching our body's skin directly to the earth, just like our ancestors did as they slept, sat, and walked on the ground nearly every day of their lives. This simple connection allows Earth's natural negative electrons to enter the human body, pacifying dangerous free radicals, which, if left unchecked, can cause severe damage to cells that can lead to many chronic diseases. Ground Therapy's patented process and suite of products were designed for you to experience all the benefits of grounding in your busy and modern lifestyle. And you'll experience the benefits of grounding within the safety and comfort of your home or office throughout the entire day, just as if you were touching the earth itself.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Solve Coagula.
Solve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled.
Snakes in the grass.
In center position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I got ya
right where I want ya. Like a raw line in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a goner.
Can you hear me now?
Drunk all part of the game.
In this scene with solo, now it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow the world with Satan's.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official, ninjascroll.web.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Tony, this is Sam, host of Formerly Seen. Sorry for the quick short break that happened there. We had an important call for the food safety course coming up here on July 27th. You're in Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, Prince Albert area, and you want to take an import food safe course, you can hit Ross Farmers Market and we can get you in. So it was a call that I could not take. It was important. So I apologize for the quick kind of pop off the radio there, but we're back. So we're going to finish this article. Before you're reading this article, about 45% of water tested has got these PFAS in the water. So we're going to pick up where we left off. These PFAS are found in nonstick frying pans, fire extinguishers, you know, things like that, et cetera. It's found in 75% of tap water and 25% of rural areas. Okay, continuing on. There are over 12,000 types of PFAS, and the study only tested 32 of them, as not all can be detected with current tests. Well, if you know we have over 12,000, how the fuck do you only have tests for 32? I mean, you guys are making gene therapies in labs, for God's sakes, growing these mRNA bio whatever pig hearts and dishes, and you're injecting them with this. Wow. Anyway, if you can make it, you should be able to test for it. That's my concern. If you can make it, you should be able to test for it. If you can't test for it, well, maybe you shouldn't be having it on the market. Areas with higher concentrations include Great Plains, Great Lakes, Eastern Seaboard, Central and Southern California. Why doesn't that surprise me? USGS scientists tested water collected directly from people's kitchen sinks. Hold on, I'm going to turn it off. Across the nation, providing the most comprehensive study to date on PFAS in the tap water from both private wells and public supplies. The study's lead author, hydrologist Kelly Smalling, said the study estimates that at least one type of PFAS of those who were monitored could be present in nearly half of the tap water in the U.S. Furthermore, PFAS concentrations were similar between public supplies and private wells. That's scary. That's scary. The fact that it's the same, whether you're in the city or you have your own well. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, most people in the United States have been exposed to PFAS, which may lead to a variety of health conditions. These include a decrease in fertility, developmental effects in children, an increased risk of some cancers, an increase in cholesterol levels, and possible issues with the body's natural hormones. That I can also believe. The EPA has developed several action plans to reduce PFAS exposure in the U.S., including using $2 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure law passed in February to promote access to clean drinking water in disadvantaged communities. What difference does that make if you're getting the same levels from private wells? Like, obviously there's ground contamination happening here. This isn't just in the water. Ground level contamination happening. Because if you're getting this from private wells, that means it's in the soil. That means we got way bigger problems on our hands. Like, holy smokes. That's not a good situation, folks. Oy vey. California. Now we know why everybody in California are a bunch of fuck-ups. My goodness. Oh, this was ugly. I saw this right before I had gone outside after I got home from Farmer's Market today. This is on LeMonde.fr. France set to allow police to spy through phones. This was published on July 6, 2023. French lawmakers agreed to a justice reform bill that includes a provision granting police the power to get suspects' geolocation through phones and other devices. French police should be able to spy on suspects by remotely activating the camera, microphone, and GPS of their phones and other devices, lawmakers agreed late on Wednesday, July 5th. Part of a wider justice reform bill, the spying provision has been attacked by both the left and the right defenders as an authoritarian stupor's charter through Justice Minister Eric Dupond-Moretti insists it would affect only dozens of cases a year. Covering laptops, cars, and other connected objects, as well as phones, the measure would allow the geolocation of suspects in crimes punishable by at least 5 years in jail. Devices could also be remotely activated to record sound and images of people suspected of terror offenses, as well as delinquency and organized crime. Delinquency? Sure. The provisions raise serious concerns over infringements of fundamental liberties. Digital rights group La Quadrature du Net wrote in a May statement. It cited the right to security, right to private life, and to private correspondence, and the right to come and go freely, calling the proposal part of a slide into heavy-handed security. During a debate on Wednesday, MPs in President Emmanuel Macron's camp inserted an amendment limiting the use of remote spying to when justified by the nature and seriousness of the time and for a strictly proportional duration. Any use of the provision must be approved by a judge. While the total duration of the surveillance cannot exceed 6 months, and sensitive professions including doctors, journalists, lawyers, judges, and MPs would not be legitimate targets. Far away from the totalitarianism of 1984, George Orwell's novel about a society under total surveillance, DuPont Moretti said, "People's lives will be saved by the law," he added. The contested measure of an article containing several other provisions was voted through an Assembly Nationale members as a wider justice overhaul bill making its way through the Parliament. That is most certainly not going to be used to only save lives. Gonna tell you right now, you would be absolutely... There's got to be like a scale of ignorance. The word ignorance wasn't even proper. The level of ask that it would require, it wouldn't even cover trying to justify that as in they wouldn't use it for any other ill-cited purpose. There's no possible way. That will most certainly be used for devious purposes on the government's behalf, especially when it comes to the riots and things they have going on over Emmanuel Macron. And why he hasn't stepped down yet is beyond me. The right idea years ago when they started chopping heads, when they got fed up with these people. How they haven't chopped his head yet is beyond me. I'm shocked the guy is still alive. That's all I'm going to say. I am completely, just because it's France, I am completely shocked that this guy is still alive. But hey, crazier things have happened. We're just scrolling up to see all the things that's going on. Biden tried to censor, and of course, oh, this was a good one. Cocaine was found on the premises of the White House just 2 days after Hunter Biden's visit. Yeah, nothing sketch happening there. I'm sure if that was Trump, he would have impeached and kicked out. But, you know, Biden's son, so it's all good. You, the average Joe, tried to sneak into the freaking White House with cocaine on your person, you would have ended up in jail. But it's perfectly fine for Hunter Biden's son, or sorry, Joe Biden's son. Oh, this is what I wanted to go over. Where's that, looking over July 5th. This right here. I found this really interesting. What a coincidence. This was on thecointelegraph.com. Bitcoin is an international asset, BlackRock CEO's bullish remarks. The CEO of the world's largest asset management firm, Larry Fink, spoke on BlackRock's spot filing and the potential benefits of crypto. Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, has delivered pro-crypto remarks amid the asset manager applying to list a spot Bitcoin exchange-traded fund, EFT, in the United States. Speaking on Fox Business on July 5th, Fink said the role of cryptocurrency was largely digitizing gold, suggesting U.S. regulators consider how an EFT directly linked to Bitcoin could democratize finance. During his time at BlackRock, Fink has often commented on major events affecting the crypto space, including the collapse of FTX in 2022 and the rising interest in Bitcoin. any one currency, so it can be represent an asset that people can play as an alternative. Fink suggests that investors could turn to Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation or the devaluation of certain currencies. As CEO of the largest asset management firm in the world, with more than $9 trillion in assets under management as of April, Fink's pro-crypto sentiment could create ripples in and out of the space. Many crypto users on social media reacted positively to Fink's interview, with at least one suggesting his words could cause the price of certain assets to surge in what the user called the Fink pump. At the time of publication, the Bitcoin price was $30,473, having dropped by roughly 1% in the previous 24 hours, to launch a spot Bitcoin ETF with cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase acting as a surveillance partner. It's unclear if the Securities and Exchange Commission will approve the investment vehicle given its track record of rejecting all previously filed spot BTC ETF applications to date. Interesting. Considering they're trying to destroy all smaller exchanges right now, and I just saw that they're trying to rip apart Binance. Binance will be ending in Canada this fall, and they're trying to destroy Binance in the United States. But Bitcoin and Coinbase, though. Oh, that's very interesting. New French riots, thousands arrested, hundreds of cops hurt as Macron scrambles to take control. It's no coincidence that now they're going to be bringing in cell phone surveillance so that anybody who's organizing these riots are going to be able to take them out. Biden admin opened to plan that would block sunlight from hitting surface of the earth and bid to limit global warming, aka let's destroy the sunlight so we can't grow nothing. What else there has going on? Court strikes down Biden's illegal plan for a $400 billion student loan for debt forgiveness. Amazing, isn't it? How they'll hand over billions of dollars to Ukraine, but when it comes to forgiving your student forgiveness, that's just no good and they'll strike it down. I find that entirely incredible, personally. Also, Macron blames social media networks for riots in France. His authorities will take steps to remove sensitive content and to identify those who call for disorder on platforms. That was on June 30th. Ooh, this was also June 29th. Vetting firm for Bill Gates' office asked female job candidates questions about pornography and sexual histories. What's this? Uh-oh. Of course it would be for Bill Gates. You know, this guy seems like such like a prim and proper, like, you know, kind of guy, but he's like such a creep. This was on the WSJ. Women interviewing for Bill Gates' private office were asked sexually explicit questions. Female job candidates say extreme vetting process by a security firm sometimes included questions about pornography and sexual histories. Gates' office says such questioning would be unacceptable. Okay, so then why were they asking it? No! Aww. Paywall. Lame. Apparently they were being asked these things to just get, you know, so they couldn't be used to be blackmailed. What else is there? A whole lot of nothing. The climate clock. What the hell is that? King Charles activated the climate clock? Huh? Oh, we've got six. There are a little more than 6 years left for world to limit global warming. What a coincidence. Agenda 2030. King Charles and London Mayor Sadiq Khan have launched a national climate clock, which warns there are just 6 years left for the world to limit global warming. Where have we heard that before? Oh, my God. You know, this is the part that, like, messes me up the most when I read silly nonsense like this, is because they use the same nonsense rhetorics over and over and over and over again. Oh, it's no coincidence. We have 6 years left for global warming. And then what? Remember when the ice caps were melting? Remember that? I remember that. I remember my dad was super huge into that green guy or whatever. The ice caps were melting and all this stuff was supposed to be happening. I'm getting so sick of this month. And that's not to say that we haven't messed up the climate. That's not to say that we haven't poisoned the ground. That's not to say that we couldn't be doing things better. Don't get it twisted. We say it's not happening at all. The things we have done to the surface of the planet have indeed changed the climate. The pole is shifting. Things are happening. But the 6 years to flatten the curve nonsense, like, I'm so over it, you guys. I'm so tired of hearing this shit over and over again. King activated the clock during the Climate Innovation Forum and the Guildhall in London today to warn the world that it is just 6 years and 24 days to limit the heating of the Earth to 1.5 degrees centigrade. The clock also has a built-in renewable energy lifeline, which shows the percent of global energy coming from renewable sources currently sits at 12.5%. This tracks factors including renewable energy sources, land and inland waters managed by indigenous peoples, climate debt, monies contributed by countries to the Green Climate Fund, and gender parity. Geez, there's nothing 2023 about that. There's no Agenda 2030 about that. My God, it's just, I feel like I'm watching a bad movie over and over again at this point. Like, no joke. Like, I feel like I'm watching such a groaner movie that I can't believe I've paid to see this. It's just unbelievable. The clock is the latest in a worldwide project which brings together art, science, technology, and grassroots organization to count down to the critical time window in which the globe must reach zero emissions. You can't have zero emissions. That's not how it works. You have zero emissions, that means everybody's dead. The first was launched in New York in September 2020 and has since seen more appear in Seoul and Glasgow, to name a few. The Climate Innovation Forum is the flagship event. Hold on, I'm going to scroll up. In London, Climate Action Week, which brings together 1,500 leaders from government, business, finance, and society to encourage collaboration and innovation to meet climate goals, of course. It's the fifth year that the event has been run. Also, what a coincidence, but okay. King Charles has long been an advocate for sustainability, using his time as Prince of Wales to champion causes which practice sustainability and green energy and to warn of the dangers of climate change. Earlier this week, stars such as Olivia Colman and Woody Harrelson, interesting. We're among well-known faces reciting the King's speeches to mark the launch of a new YouTube channel focusing on climate change. TV was founded in 2020 by Charles, or RETV was founded in 2020 by Charles and has since made more than 100 short films about sustainable solutions to help the environment. During his time as Prince of Wales, Charles made numerous speeches about the environment beginning February 1970 when he highlighted conservation issues. 21, Charles delivered his first impassioned speech about his personal concern over oil pollution and single-use plastic. He also told how, as a teenager in the 1960s, he was concerned about the destruction of trees, wetlands, and habitats, as well as the white heat of progress and technology to the exclusion of nature and our surroundings. In his 1970s address, Charles highlighted a problem that has become an illustration of humanity's threat to nature. Then he had to say, when you think that each day a person produces roughly 2 pounds of rubbish per day, and there are 55 million of us on this island using non-returnable bottles and indestructible plastic containers, it's not difficult to imagine the mountains of refuse. To imagine the mountains of refuse that we shall have to deal with somehow. Meanwhile, you have places like Sweden, which are burning their garbage and then using it as a means of power, and they're actually running out of garbage to burn there. So they're importing garbage from other countries in order to be able to use to burn to make power. You know... Madonna was admitted to intensive care on Saturday after being found unresponsive in New York City, postponed tour due to serious bacterial infection. Biden uses CPAP machine for sleep apnea. So, after strap lines appear on his face. What? Heavily redacted minutes of confidential meetings of German Corona Expert Council obtained and published. Oh no, Nazi Germany 2.0. They're censoring everything they did? Oh no. The secret files of the German Corona Expert Council in Germany. A new FOIA is out. A physician won against the German government. He received protocols of the Corona Expert Council. The group recommended tough measures like mandatory vaccines. Of course they did. Of course they did. Obviously, the Nuremberg trials, nothing changed. My goodness. Just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. What does Twitter have to say? Here we go. Trump had maybe 600 people at his Iowa rally. His claim of 2,700 is dishonest. That's total fire code capacity, even every square foot. Twitter's just got absolutely nothing. Not even going to lie. I don't even want to like scroll through my Twitter right now. It's just ridiculous. In fact, TikTok actually has more interesting stuff than Twitter right now. In response to yesterday's TTC subway knife attack, Mayor Olivia Chow says it makes sense to add youth workers guidance counselors to prevent future issues. Do you think Olivia Chow is right, or is this just another foolish decision? Honestly, like, can we just talk about that for a second? Because I just saw that there was a news article in Prince Albert the other day. Homeschoolers should not have to pay public school taxes. Entirely correct. We're going to get back to that, though. Like, our youth are going crazy. Like, here's an article. This is from government, govt.exe is corrupt. So, at government underscore corrupt. Or government, govt underscore corrupt. And it's just a video of this teenager running around with a knife, doing things he shouldn't be doing. Like, stabbing a guy. And, like, he's not, like, a young teenager. Like, he seems to be, like, you know, 17 to 19. Like, he's got some build on him. He ain't just, like, a 12-year-old, 13-year-old. And, like, just the other day, I saw, like, an article that apparently there was another teenager, a group of teenagers in Prince Albert that did this exact same thing. He saw a teenager throw some garbage on the ground. He asked a teenager to pick it up. So the teenager picked it up. He walked down the street and threw it on the ground again. And, like, Buddy was saying that, like, long story short, there was an issue that ensued, and this teenager threatened him with a handgun. A handgun that's been out of production for 30 years and is illegal on Canada. And he was threatened with a handgun by a teenager. You know, I have a lot of thoughts when it comes to teenagers being grown-ups, but they're not grown-ups. And we are failing our youth in such drastic ways. It's not to say that there hasn't been problem youth in history, okay? Like, there's been even a lot of posts and stuff coming up just this last little while. I've been seeing quite a few photos on Facebook, and it's been showing, like, news articles, like, you know, a news article over, like, the last decade, for, like, the last 100 years, talking about how youth don't want to work no more, or nobody wants to work anymore, or youth are just problems, or blah, 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 blah. As long as you have youth, you're going to have young people who don't have that life experience. They have that naivety of coming out into the world, and they think they can do this, and they think they can do that, but they simply just don't have the experience. You know, this is why we need to have a healthy, vast dynamic of elders and young people who need to respect one another and who need to listen to one another. You know, it's because, like, the elders, like, you know, older people, you know, 60, 70, 80, you know, they've been around the block. They have some life experience. You know what I mean? They know what they're talking about when it comes to a lot of things in certain aspects. They've been there. They've done that. They've learned their life lessons, so to speak. And they want to teach the young people, or at least a good portion of them do, not all of them, teach the young people, because they don't want these young people to have to suffer like they did. You know, it's almost like it's a cruel joke. Humanity is a cruel joke. That you need to keep starting from scratch, and whether you believe in, what's that called, reincarnation, or whether you believe you come here, you die, and then you go on to somewhere else, you get one shot, and then you die and move on. Either way, I don't really care what you believe, but to me, it's a cruel freaking joke, a cruel joke. That you get born as this tiny little human being with no recollection of any of the past information you've gone through, any of the past, you know what I mean? It's like you're born as a clean slate, and you have to be programmed by other human beings, bring you up as a decent human being to do good in the world. And, you know, it's almost even a bigger slap in the face if you believe in reincarnation. Because at least when, if you don't believe in reincarnation and you believe you have one shot at doing this, just one, that is just like you've got one chance. And there's a lot of information you got to cram into your brain before you croak. And there's a lot of things you got to try and do right before you croak. With reincarnation, you got to keep doing this shit over and over and over again. And while you're supposed to learn your lesson that you're supposed to learn in this lifetime, on top of knowing all that you should know from your previous lifetime, and more often than not, you don't get that. I think it's cruel. I think it's cruel. So to have that balance with the elders trying to teach these young people, but at the same time, the whole reason you're here is to learn lessons, you know what I mean? You got to go through the struggles in order to learn the lesson, but, you know, your elders don't want, they want to teach you right so you don't have these issues. Because, you know, a lot of older people don't want to watch you suffer. They don't want to have to watch you go through the struggles that they went through when they know the answer, and they could very easily tell you the answer so you don't have to go through that shit again. You know what I mean? But instead, we have this Hegelian dialectic that's been programmed into us a lot of it, you know, you can see it quite prominently with the millennials versus the boomers. And this is sadly why I get along with more boomers than I do millennials. Nothing against millennials. Like, it has to be a very specific time. I get along with a lot of Gen Xers. A lot of Gen Xers and a lot of boomers. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the boomers, like, they had their time, they had their prime, and now they're kind of being shifted off to the side, but they still have a lot of information and education to offer, but they're not being heard. They're not being listened to. You know what I mean? It's like nobody cares. And a lot of people can say, and this is what made me laugh so hard during the COVID era, COVID, it's not even real, but whatever. As a lot of people were saying that, you know, like, oh, we need to protect our grandparents. We need to protect the boomers. We need to protect grandma. But, like, they shoved these people away in a nursing home, never to be heard from again, and they just forget about them. And it's like, but they have so much information to offer, especially when you have, like, old war vets, old farmers. Why does my phone keep tripping out like this? It keeps pushing random buttons. I don't know what it's doing. But, you know, then you have the Gen Xers, which just kind of mind their own fucking business. A lot of them are kids, but most of them just mind their own damn business. And then you have the millennials who think they know everything. Meanwhile, they're running around like a bunch of victims, crying because turtle cell feelings got hurt. And it's interesting because either they're like super conservative or they're super liberal. I mean, the majority of them just want to mind their own business. They want to work their 9-to-5. They want to make sure that they can provide for their kids. They want to watch the game. They just want to like be, you know what I mean? They just want to exist and have a good time. They don't want to hurt anybody else and those things like that. And it's like, it's really sad because that's really like, you know, a lot of their undoing. It's like they don't want to progress in things. That's another conversation for another time. But it's like, it just makes me sad, the warfare between these two groups. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of the millennials are upset because, you know, the boomers are out of touch with how things are. But it's like a lot of the millennials didn't go through what the boomers went through. So they don't really have an understanding of how it was. You know, it's hard to be in somebody else's shoes when the time that they grew up in is now gone. And the time that you're growing up in is going to be gone here too. And it's really sad that we can't like get together and like work things out and discuss things and educate our youth, because now we've got youth. Again, that's not to say that this group of youth is, how do I say this, any more special, I guess one could say, in certain ways. Obviously, there's like, you know, it's, how do I say this? It's not like they're a new class of superhuman or different genome or anything like that. They're still human. Like, there's nothing special about them per se. But the time they're growing up in is most certainly different than the time that every generation before them has grown up in. And because of that, we have a lot of things that are contributing to the demoralization of society, so to speak. Specifically, the rise in narcissism because of technological advancements in social media. Now, we're living in a Web 2 world, and we're moving very quickly into a Web 3 world. So, like, Web 1 was all, like, HTML, blah, blah, blah. Web 2 is, like, social media. And we're moving into Web 3, where things are going to be different ever still. The privatization of domains, Web3 blockchain technology using almost like we're going into more deep web shit because of the censorship of the mainstream internet, that we got to move into more blockchain and deep web usage of computer to computer rather than having that third-party centralized system. More and more people are becoming a little tech savvy to get around government controls, which is good in many ways, bad in others. If you see, for example, like the Sound of Freedom movie, things like sex trafficking is becoming really, really bad. I have yet to watch that movie, but because of the demoralization of society and the lack of positive spirituality, and not the toxic positivity bullshit. We're talking about true positive spirituality moving towards the greater good in the way that's actually the greater good, with people having the freedom of choice, people having proper education, with people having the right intentions moving forward, where you have a balance between the self and for everybody else, when you're willing to self-sacrifice for everybody else because you know that if you have a group of people collectively willing to sacrifice a little bit for one another and make sure that each other is okay, then you have in the aggregate a healthier, more rounded society of educated people that can't easily be bullied into making decisions that they shouldn't, they shouldn't have to make, or, you know, they don't want to make. Then you don't have things like theft of property. Then you don't have things like, theft of truth, things like that, because, you know, there's consent and there's proper education and discussion when it comes to these things, you know. It's like, and then, you know, all these people that are talking about things like, oh, we want communism. Well, I mean, nobody really technically owns the land. So if you can have a group of people that act as stewards for the land, but then just, you know, get to keep their intellectual property when it comes to their houses and things like that, but are at the same time, you know, like, have that understanding that just because you can build yourself a brick castle doesn't mean that you need to build yourself a brick castle. You know what I mean? It's like, if you want to, go ahead. But it would be based more on need than want, but that doesn't mean that want is excluded from it. You know what I mean? There's that balance. If you want to have like a nice little wooden log cabin, you should be able to have that. If you want to have a smaller home, you can have that. If you want to have a bigger home, you can have that. Just understand, the bigger it is, the more responsibility it is, the more responsibility it is. You know, it's like, this is where there's that disconnect. And it always ends up being that disconnect, because when you have an individual with the wrong intention, where it's all about the self and me, and greed, then you have that authority, perceived authority, not an actual authority, but a perceived authority, perceived hierarchy begin to happen, and that shift begins to happen, where you have that power control, and you have those societies created from violence and shit like that. You listen to me because I know best, regardless of what you want, whereas you don't actually know best. You have no fucking idea. You know what I mean? It's like, versus knowing that you could have all the things, and if you want to have the things, that's fine, but understanding that your being here is finite. So it's like, if you want to create a lasting legacy that's actually for other people to enjoy and for future generations to enjoy and for other people to enjoy, you know, it's just like, it's that working togetherness. So it's like, it's anarchy, and it's the communism that people want, but they're never going to get because they always forget the other half of the equation. They seem to think it's all about collective, 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 and they always forget the individual in the name of the collect. Personally, what I find, it sounds nice. It sounds pretty. Being able to work with other people sounds great. But when you forget that it's a bunch of individuals that make up the collective and you work in a hive mind kind of way where you don't matter as an individual, it's only about the collective, then you have very, very bad things happen. That's where things like genocides and shit starts to happen. If you don't want to move in the name of the hive mind, well, we have no use for you. Well, okay, well, who's directing the hive mind? You know what I mean? It's a very dangerous game to play, and it takes a very educated and balanced level of self to even try to achieve that, because everybody wants that, but they want to engage in that through violence. And then when they realize, when they try to engage in that they don't matter when it comes to the collective, suddenly they have a problem with it. Well, what do you mean? This example, there was like a guy who was running around asking if they want to share their GDP scores that they're getting in school with, or I think it's GDP, I don't know. It's their education level scores with other students that don't work as hard. Well, I don't want to do that. Why would I want to do that when I'm working hard for my grades and they're not working hard for theirs? Exactly. Exactly. There comes a lot of victimization and entitlement, I find, when it comes to forcing people into communism, which is a big issue that the millennials have. You don't really find that so much with the boomers, but you find that big time with the millennials, which is the Hegelian dialectic, when they were planting socialism through the universities and things and through the public education with our system, because Canada is a socialist system that is run via a constitutional monarchy, which when you get even deeper into that, the Canada, the all caps Canada is a corporation. It's a really, really gross mess that you start looking into. But that's semantics aside, that, you know, this is the biggest thing that I find with millennials versus boomers, is boomers have the individualism mindset, but they work collectively because that's what they had to do in order to be able to make it. Millennials, however, they have the collective mindset, but they work individually. It's really interesting. Now that I think about it, I might have to actually make some TikTok or something about that, because, damn, I just blew my own mind, and that just makes me really sad. Really sad. Because if these people would put their shit aside and work on, you know, if the millennials who are working as individuals but want to have that collective mindset would sit down with the Gen Xers and the boomers and be with these people who have an individual mindset but have a collective work ethic, could find the best of both worlds. And it's a real damn shame that we're pitting everybody against one another when all it is a flip side of a coin. Man, what did I just do to myself? Oh, it's a good thing this isn't live streamed, because I'm just sitting here just like, whoa. Like, whoa. Anyway. Going forward, though, I think we do need to start educating our youth on the proper things so that we don't have to keep dealing with this. I mean, which brings me to this other tweet here that was right underneath this one. Homeschoolers should not have to pay public school taxes. And I completely agree. I completely agree. What are you doing funding somebody else's education? What are you doing paying taxes for a school you're not using? What are you doing paying for services that you're not using? You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm being punished. People can say like, oh, well, you chose to take your kids out of school. Yes, but like, for example, look at the whole vaccine thing. And a lot of people can't even put their kids into school because of mandatory vaccines. And this all was really coming down the tube when it came to the measles thing. I specifically remember Pan Ran. I specifically remember when Del Bigtree started climbing the ladder to fame and, you know, RFK Jr. and all these people started specifically climbing the ladders. Dr. Tenpenny and et cetera, et cetera. You don't even see, like, any conversations about vaccines anymore. You don't see any conversations, even about the COVID one. It's like there's a little bit about the COVID one, about the died suddenly stuff, but, like, there's no conversations being had around vaccines anymore. None. It's all about, like, LGBTQ stuff. And I specifically remember back in the day when we were having discussions about specifically if they start mandating vaccines for kids, it's going to be a slippery slope for everything else. And so many people are like, well, you'll never get me to take the flu shot, blah, blah, blah. Well, that was clear when like less than 10% of people get the flu shot because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And then every year you get it, it becomes less and less effective. You know what I mean? And then paying for these taxes for a school you can't even put your kid into, and depending on where you are, the homeschool regulations are becoming more and more strict. They want to get at your kids. They, you know, everybody's talking about like LGBTQ and education, how they want to get at your kids. No, they're taking every possible angle on getting at your kids. Every possible angle. Every single one. I mean, for example, Canada just made it. They slipped it through in the budget bill. This is how scuzzy Canada is. This is how gross Canadian politicians are. Y'all get mad because these United States politicians will stay up to like 3 in the morning to pass a bill. Things like that. Canada doesn't even take that route anymore. They don't even take that route. They either just pass it through, regardless of what anybody has to say, or they slip it in on a budget bill. Because they just put through new regulations for a therapeutic product has to be licensed and regulated. And they changed the labeling requirements. So everybody's like, well, what's the big deal with these labeling requirements? Well, let's see. It's going to cost like $50,000, $60,000 per product to change the label. And when you've got a small business, we're going to completely take out the small businesses. So now you've got your kids being taught to coddle your turtle self in school. And when they catch a cold, you can't even go down to the store to buy yourself some elderberry syrup because there's no company making elderberry syrup in Canada anymore except for the one company, offensively ridiculous. So your freedom of choice just got completely obliterated. Like, they are coming for our kids. They are coming for our youth. They are trying to destroy their minds and their bodies. Every single aspect of what constitutes a human being in our youth, they are trying to obliterate it. And it's really, really sad. I'm just making myself sad. Okay. I'm going to have a quickie commercial break, and I think Rod is listening, and I'm kind of bored of talking to myself today, because I didn't really have a show lined up. I was going to work on my Wallapini tonight, so I'm going to be doing that all of this weekend and all of this next week. Just a heads up, guys, that I will not be here next week Friday before I go to my commercial break. I am not going to be here next week Friday. Because I am at a women's Festival volunteering. So I'm going to be there setting up tables, setting up booths, cooking, et cetera, et cetera, cleaning, you know, getting all the things ready. You know, I'm going to be busy, busy, busy. So I will not be able to be here next week, Friday. So we're going to take a quickie commercial break. I'm going to have my friend Rod on the show because I miss this guy and I'm just so busy this last little while. Even tonight, after I get off my show, I have to go work on Freedomizer website and Farmers Market website because I get both those websites update and my Farmers Market website keeps stroking out on me here. So it's a busy night, but that's okay. I look forward. I love being on this radio station. I love the Freedomizer team, so I am going to get it all done up. Okay, so we will be right back after this quickie commercial break.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Salve Coagula.
Salve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled.
Snakes in the grass.
Son of perdition. You got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I got ya right where I want ya. Like a roll line in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a goner. Can you hear me now?
We just all part of the game.
In this scene with solo, now it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow where we're Satan's.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official.
ninjascroll.web.com. Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared. It's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Freaks, outsiders, weirdos, the wallflowers, oddball loser, fish out of water, speak up. Talk quieter. We are different. There's no arguing. It's a fact. A patchwork of flaws, we grow and adapt. We're funky, unconventional. See life through kaleidoscope eyes. In a field full of clovers, with our four leaves, we bask in blue skies. Flaws are natural. Our imperfections, our weaknesses, our scars. There is a misfit in all of us. We just have to be brave enough to embrace who we are.
Hello everyone, I want to introduce you to our friends at Marty.com. At Marty, you can stock up on all your pantry items and other household items for way, way cheaper than traditional grocery stores. I like that most of the items are organic. Also, I really dig their 1 cent deal of the day. It changes every single day. I recently snagged a 10-ounce bag of dog treats for Chewbacca for a penny. Normally they sell on their site for $7.99. With the upcoming food shortages, this is my favorite place to stock up on canned goods. If you live in the mountain or Pacific time zones, you need to get with Marty.com. M-A-R-T-I-E.com. Look for our link on our FreedomizerRadio.com website and get a $10 free just because I told you to go there. Marty.com. Great deals, good feels.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
Hello, everybody. everybody. This is Sam, host of Open World, formerly known as Against the Grain. And we are back after talking about news and kind of gabbering on about the nonsense Hegelian dialectics that we've been fighting over, which are just so silly to me. Just so silly. Like, we could collectively work together and, like, figure things out, but instead we choose to fight over semantics, completely missing the big picture. Anyway, it's just weird stuff. You there, Rod?
Hello, good evening.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, all the complaints but none. I'm getting things done and that's good.
That's wonderful.
So what do you have for us today?
Well, I think I'll do another guided meditation, and we could read from Wallace Waddles first. Tie the guided meditation to the material we went over from the Elon Musk Tim Urban article.
Sure. How long do you need for your guided meditation, though? Don't you need, like, 20 minutes?
Well, the last one was 10 minutes.
Okay.
Or so, and... You said you want to discuss before and after or something like that?
Well, it's entirely up to you. I don't mind. I would love that. It's just saying that it's like we've got 41 minutes left, so I don't want to cut you short on your guided meditation.
Okay. And I could talk about Ki. I went to an Aikido with Ki class a while ago.
Yes.
And
sure.
I saw a presentation a long time ago, and it was the same. It was the same material, so I'm not going to learn anything new. I'm just going to learn more how to do the thing. I'm not going to see anything new. The phenomenon is there. So humans have two modes. One of them is all distracted, and then it was focused, if you want to look at it that way. And when you get in the focused mode, all your reflexes work better, and the teacher agreed, yes, everything works better. I asked whether this is the same as hypnosis, and he told the story of a fellow he knows who, maybe I should talk about the key first. They have the idea of a one point, which is sort of like your center of gravity, but it's really not, because it's, you can move it around by using your imagination. And if you move it down, then you're more centered and balanced and focused and in the what am I calling, the better mode. And if you move it up, then you're not. And they also say weight underside, not weight upper side. So you psychologically keep your weight as low as possible on your lower side, and then you're well balanced. And when they're in this mode, if they're very difficult, people are very difficult to push over. So the test is they'll push on your shoulder, and if you're off balance, if you're in the bad mode, then you're off balance and you stagger, whatever. Whereas if you're in the correct mode, then your reflexes kick in and you're very solid against being pushed. And another one is if you're standing up with your arms down, they'll just grab your wrist and lift up gently. And it's very dramatically different. You might be, you know, kind of soft and again, off balance, or you might just be very solid. If you're sitting down, then you say, okay, your one point goes beneath the floor. And I suppose you could imagine going to the center of the earth. You could imagine having a connection with the center of the earth. And the master wrote a short book. One of the things one of the old jiu-jitsu guys, I guess, came up with Aikido, and that was Morihito Ueshiba, I think it was. And then his student, Tokei, was the one who brought Aikido to the United States and presumably other countries. And he was the one that wrote this book. And then my teacher had met with him, I think. Yeah. So so we have the idea of one point, and it's your center of gravity, and moves. It can move downward. And they also have this. They have three different inductions. Meditations. One of them is smaller, 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 and smaller. So you imagine, you know, something the size of the universe and the size of yourself, and then smaller, and then planet the size of one point, which is infinitely small, or larger, 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 larger. So from one point to yourself to the universe. And the sensei said, when you breathe out to the edges of the universe. When you breathe in towards one point.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you have the idea of everything being very large and very small. Also, they're able to tell. After a while, they're able to tell without pushing on you or grabbing your wrist whether you're in the correct mode or not. And so this fellow, he said, okay, imagine your one point being below you and now a little bit forward, and I did that. And he said, almost, and I imagined, in my imagination, I moved it another inch. Oh, there we got it. Well, that's astonishing. What was different? So I asked him, what do you look for? What do you see? What's different? And he said, well, mostly it's the feeling. You know, when you see someone and you just get a bad feeling about their intentions, it's been a long time since I've been in that kind of situation. I don't think I remember that. Well, you know, when someone's staring at you from behind, you know, I'm not sure I've had that experience either. There was a scientist named Rupert Sheldrake who did some formal studies of the sense of being stared at. And he would have, I think it was college students, because they like being tested things on. So you'd have someone sit behind them and stare at them or not stare at them. And my problem with that scenario, that experimental setup, is there might be a difference in the sounds you're making when you're staring versus not staring. You might be holding your breath when you're staring, you know, or you might be moving your body around, fidgeting, and then all of a sudden when you're staring, you're not. So it might be that someone can hear behind you whether you're staring or not staring. So a better test would be go ahead and stare, but either stare, and they'd flip a coin to tell you, either stare at the person in front of you or stare next to them, stare somewhere else. So you're reducing the variability, you know, the uncontrolled variables as much as possible. So, and I think they also did experiments with staring at someone through a security camera and even through a recording, trying to make it work back in time. And those are, like, physically speaking, quite different phenomena. So they're, I don't know the details of that. So it's been a long time since I looked at it. So Rupert Sheldrake has done experiments with the study, the feeling of being stared at. He also did some experiments with dogs and other pets who know when their animals, when their owners are coming home. And of course, if it's the same time every day, that's stories of the owner had to come home, you know, unexpectedly, and then the dog jumped up at the window happily looking for the owner. So Sheldrake, sense of being stared at. So I'm not really sure I've had that sense either, but he said, okay, so it's like a feeling kind of like that. So he could tell which mode I'm in. And it's very subtle if you're in it or not in it. Very small difference. So I asked, is this the same as hypnotic induction? Is this hypnosis? And he told the story of a fellow that he knew who was into hypnosis and could hypnotize himself. And so he decided to try it in a meeting. They had about 100 guys. There was 100 guys in this room. And the master was at the front. And they were doing an exercise for an hour. Each one of them had a little box with a bell in it, something like that. And they'd shake them up and down. I think there was some shouting. They'd go, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it was in Japanese, I suppose. And so there's this room full of guys shaking their bells. And all of a sudden the master shouts, "This!" And my teacher knew that he wasn't yelling at him, but he was yelling at the guy next to him. So after the session, he asked what was going on. He said, well, that was the moment when I tried this hypnosis. So it's astonishing that somebody can just do something in his mind and the teacher can tell out of all that room and all that noise and everything going on. So, and of course, I haven't excluded the possibility that something else was going on and he was reacting to whatever. But it's a good story. So according to that, if I can take that at face value, that it's not the same as hypnotic induction, which means we have more than one altered state, more than one centered and balanced or relaxed or whatever. And this does have to do with being relaxed, because I think if you're... But that would be an interesting test. Could you be anxious and still have your one point to be on? I forgot what they call it, being in that mode. Could you do that while noticeably unhypnotized? someone on YouTube, who I've lost track of, studied transcendent states. I started by looking at the flow state. I asked him also if this name was the flow state. And, of course, he did not. He said, what's that? He wasn't up on this sort of thing. The flow state is what you get when you do a repetitive task and you get really good at it. And then time, you know, you lose track of time and all of a sudden you've been working all evening and you don't notice it. And also you feel a sense of oneness with the universe because, and people have figured this out, your frontal lobes are where your sense of time happens. And they're also when your sense of separation from everything else happens, if I can rely on what I read. So, and in this flow state, your frontal lobes become less active. And so you've got less of a sense of time and you've got less of a sense of separation from everything. There's a fellow who studied surfers. And surfers would say, I became one with the wave. And that's a silly thing to tell a psychologist. Well, that's data, so I passed it on. Oh, yes, that makes sense in connection with everything else they knew about this flow state. So the surfers were in the flow state. I think Freud did not like the idea of altered states. He did not like the idea of studying psychology for the sake of getting better. He said, no, psychology is only to be used when you're sick and you're trying to get well. As long as you're well, then we don't even touch it. We don't look at that. Basic attitude. So that's the basic attitude that psychiatry and psychology have had since then. So in the 70s, some brave individual started studying, I think it was the flow state or something like that, and how to get better. And then they've discovered that there's a transcendent states. And I don't know much about that, except that's a data point for what it's worth. Someone says there's a spectrum of transcendent states. So I don't know if this key state counts as a transcendent state, or is it, I guess I'd call it that, but it definitely seems to be distinct from others. Okay. So, and it's similar to the karate thing of punching through a board. If you aim at the board, you know it's not going to work. You have to punch through the board and imagine on the side. The teacher said, "If you think there's a barrier, don't go through it. Just be on the other side." And whatever, so he was talking about psychological barriers also. So when you do that, your muscles work differently. And my favorite example was from the demonstration I saw first. They talked about the unbendable arm. They said, okay, put your wrist on my shoulder and try to make it rigid. And you try to do that, and they put your hand on your elbow, and it's easy to bend, so it's not very rigid. Now think flow. Imagine your arm is a fire hose. They say, okay, there's all this key energy coming out of it. And then your arm is very difficult to bend. Well, you can also think, my interpretation of that is when our muscles come in opposing pairs. When you think rigid, tense up all the muscles, and that includes the tricep, which extends your arm, and the bicep, which contracts your arm. So you're putting, as he put it, you're putting half your energy into your muscle that bends your arm. So you're fighting yourself. Whereas if you think flow or you think point, if you just try to reach, then you're tensing your tricep, but leaving your bicep relaxed. So and again, the arm is very strong. So yeah, the same thing with the punch. If you're tensed up, then you're pulling your punch back at the same time you're pushing it forward. I think a lot of what I experienced was can be down to not having your muscles fight each other. They had another exercise involving you put your shoulder, you stand next to a fellow and you put your right hand on his right shoulder. So you're reaching across his back. And then you slap your thigh. Of course, you have to go right through his shoulder and you knock him down. And so if you're in the correct mode, and maybe if he isn't, I don't know if you're both in the correct mode, then you can knock him down. And my first couple of tries, I was focused on my fingers where I was pushing. And then I finally made it work, and I didn't feel anything in my fingers really, but I felt it in my upper arm, where my arm muscle pulls down. Oh, of course, that's the muscle I'm using, so I just focus on that. That's where the action is. So, all right, so that's another example of what you can do. So all the Aikido techniques are supposed to be used with this sort of mindset and this being in this mode. So you've got your balance and whatever. I don't really have the words for having properly centered and balanced and all your reflexes working properly and and your muscles not fighting each other. There are a few other exercises. They all have the same flavor. So, I'm very interested in finding out more about this. And I said, we know that the subconscious mind, also called the unconscious, communicates in the language of symbolism. Could this one point be a symbol? He said, yes, it's all metaphors. And one of the other students said, I have to keep remembering, the word for the thing is not the thing. Because, it's not like you're going to put your one point into a jar because it's there. It's looking, if you imagine it go down in the center of the earth, I doubt any instrumentation at the center of the earth would detect anything there. This is all happening inside your mind, inside your brain and the rest of the body, which makes up the mind. It's where it's physically happening, but you communicate with the unconscious by imagining this point moving around and so forth. All right, so I'd like to put that into the guided meditation also, that your center of gravity or your one point is going down and so forth. I would like to add in, maybe not tonight, Stuart Lichtman, cybernetic transposition. It's supposedly the most powerful and effective method that's been devised, communicating with the unconscious and eliminating blockers, that self-defeating habit patterns, and achieving success. That's probably more of a thing that I can do right now. I haven't exactly prepared for that. I was thinking of doing that later. So I could look at Wallace Wattles. He wrote a book in 1910 titled The Science of Getting Rich. And it's based on a specific old Hindu idea of monism, that there's only one thing in the universe. If there's only one thing in the universe, then there's a problem, because how can there be two things? And then if there's two things in the universe, then there's a problem, because how are they connected? So I'd like to say neither monism nor dualism can be correct. And at some point I'd like to talk about double entry bookkeeping, because it's one of those things that we should all know. Wallace Wattles said every day should be a profitable day. Basically, he said if you're going backward. And Jordan Peterson said if you end up your day worse than you started, that's a stupid day. See, am I getting ahead or am I getting behind? This is a profitable day or was this a day of loss? Our ideas of what profit and loss are, probably accountants have said that'll be a good thing. And as you're running a thrift store plus other businesses, and you may be using some sort of bookkeeping. Okay, let's start with that.
Right now I'm just kind of learning some coaching stuff, but the bookkeeping is coming up right behind, because that is very, very important. So definitely interested in getting deeper in that some of these times.
I'm sorry, I missed what you said.
Oh, I said, I need to learn that. So learning about bookkeeping and stuff and talking about Wattles and stuff, we can definitely visit that in near future shows. Not this next week, because I'll be gone, but the week after we can definitely, prepare for that, because I want to dig a little deeper into that. But anyway, I'll let you get to your meditation here, because there's 24 minutes left, and I don't want to cut you short.
Okay. Well, I would like to talk about bookkeeping first, because it can be very rapid. It's not much more complicated than 1 equals 2 plus 3. The basic equation is assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. And if you've ever owned a house, you probably bought it with a mortgage, and so you've got the idea of the asset is the entire house, and then the liability is the amount of the mortgage that you owe. And then your owner's equity is the difference. You subtract one from the other. So therefore, your owner's equity equals your assets minus your liabilities. And in the Renaissance, late Middle Ages, early Renaissance, it says in the Bible, when you build a tower, count the cost first. Otherwise, you'll have it half finished, you run out of money, and your neighbors will laugh at you. And it was a problem to know how much money anyone had, because when they did their accounting, money in, they'd add, and when they paid money out, they'd subtract. And that should work, except that subtraction is full of errors. It's very difficult to subtract without making mistakes. So nobody knew how much they had. And this one particular family had a secret formula for how they did this, and they got rich, and they outcompeted everybody. And that is, they switched the equation around, so they did their accounting with only addition, and then do just one subtraction at the end. And that's their secret, and that's what they do now. So that's why the equation is assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. Now, under each of those three categories, you can have different accounts. So under assets, you have cash, and you could have bank accounts, and you could have multiple bank accounts. Under liabilities, that's anything you owe. And equity is, I don't know what the exact example of an equity account. Okay, so then there's debit and credit, and that's, that can be subtraction and addition. It means literally left and right. So for each column, each of those three categories, you have an account, and each account has a left and a right. So your assets, you have cash, and you have debit, means lowering. And again, you just add things, but it's understood to be a negative. So at the end of your accounting period, you subtract, you take all of that you've debited, and take all you've credited, and you subtract one column from the other. And that's your you had your starting balance, and now you've got your final balance. So debit on the cash account, on the assets, means lower, again, left hand. And on the credit, on the asset, cash or other asset accounts, it means right hand, which is increase. Now, on the other side of the equation, debit and credit still mean left and right, but this time the meaning is upside down, and so a debit would be an increase. So for liabilities, a debit would be an increase, and a credit would be a decrease. And for owner's equity, that's the same. So if you wanted, for example, to move, if you put money from cash into a bank account, those are both assets. So you debit cash and you credit the bank account. Or conversely, if you're withdrawing, then you debit the bank account and credit cash. You could have a transaction between involving an asset and a liability. So if you borrow money, then you've got more, that's a lot more of an asset, but you also owe more, that's a higher liability. So you debit liabilities, that's whoever you owe, and I mean whatever account you owe on, you debit that, and that's an increase. You now owe more, and you credit cash, so you've got more cash. But when you borrow money, your equity has not changed. Your net worth has not changed. The owner's equity is your net worth. That's what you want to build up over time. So if you were to find a dollar on the sidewalk, then you would debit assets. You'd debit owner's equity because you now got more, and you'd credit cash or assets because you've now got more. Take an accounting class. You'll go through all these different combinations and get some practice. That's the basic picture right there. There's another thing that is the time value of money. Which would you rather have, a dollar now or a dollar six a year from now? And if you say I'd rather have a dollar six, then your discount rate is less than 6%. Whereas if you say I'd rather have the dollar now, then your discount rate is more than 6%. So the point of lending money at interest is that someone who has the dollar would rather have the dollar six later, and someone who doesn't have the dollar would rather have the dollar now and pay the dollar six later. So it's an exchange of present to future for people who value those things differently. So those two ideas really are most of what I learned in a bookkeeping class.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We could do a little. I'll make that right here. I computer doesn't like me. Well, he wrote another book, The Science of Being Great, which I suspect is the same sort of few things I know about radio is you're not supposed to have good time. Here we are. It's fairly lengthy, but it's 77 pages, but he does say the same thing over and over. And it's kind of a teaching technique where you go into detail and then he'll do the summary again. Whatever may be said in praise of poverty, the fact remains that it is not possible to live a really complete or successful life unless one is rich. And Lichtman says you have blockers, which are psychological. They're unconscious habit patterns that once served a purpose in childhood. You know, they kept you safe, but now they get in your way. And so he says that you have a glass ceiling, an unconscious performance limit. And so you need to negotiate with these blockers and resolve these blockers by communicating with your unconscious in order to remove that ceiling. Well, let's move it to somewhere else. Wattles argues for the right to be rich. So why are you even considering this path if you don't believe you should get rich? So he talks about that. And then he says there is a science to getting rich. He says there is a thinking stuff from which the entire universe is made, and then a thought impressed upon this substance tends to bring the thing into existence, kind of like what we talk about now in manifestation. I think this was one of the early versions of manifestation. He says that the proper way to use the will, you do not try to send your mind out. He was arguing against his competitors, and I don't know who his competitors were, but he was saying, no, do not use your mind to go out and try to do things for you. The proper way use for the mind is to act upon yourself. So his basic formula is that you imagine the thing you want. Of course, you should have imagined it in detail so you can feel it and see it and smell it and so on. And then hold that in your mind while with faith that it's on its way to you and gratitude that it's as if it's already arrived, while at the same time going about your daily business, doing everything in a certain way, which means as efficiently as possible. So you first speaks about the right to be rich. There's a science of getting rich. There's certain laws which govern the process of acquiring riches. Once these laws are learned and obeyed by any man, he will get rich with mathematical certainty. The ownership of money and property comes as a result of doing things in a certain way. Those who do things in a certain way or accidentally get rich, while those who do not do things in a certain way, no matter how hard they work or how able they are, remain poor. It is a natural law that like causes always produce like effects, and therefore every man or woman who learns to do things in a certain way will infallibly get rich. Then he makes an argument about people. There are people in all neighborhoods. It's not a matter of environment, for if it were, all the people in certain neighborhoods would be wealthy, and then people of one city would be rich and other towns would be poor, and so forth. But everywhere we see rich and poor side by side. And it's not a matter of talent, because we see people with talent remaining poor, while others who have little talent get rich. So he talks a lot about this certain way, and he really doesn't go into detail about what this certain way is. He says that you should not, once you decide to start getting rich, you should not look for some new or unusual thing to do. And again, he's arguing against somebody else, and I don't know who that is or what they're saying. Certainly, you could expect to do something like starting a business. That's certainly a new and unusual thing. He suggests that the best way to grow is by growth. You keep doing the same things, only do them, I guess, mindfully. You do them in a certain way. You do everything efficiently and you succeed at what you're doing before you try to do something else. And I guess it's certainly true that if you just try to do something else, but if you're not mindful, if you're making all the same mistakes, then you're going to be doing things in a way that is wasteful instead of successful. If you're anxious because there's a hole in your fence and the wild animal thing to do to help fix your anxiety is to fix the fence, then you'll have peace of mind. Whereas the second best thing is to just relax about maybe the animals will come in and maybe it's okay. But that's just an idea I had talking around. Okay. The working, Edward, 1910 was before the communist revolution, but it was building up toward that. The working class may become the master class whenever they will begin to do things in a certain way. The law of wealth is the same for them as it is for all others. This they must learn, and they will remain where they are as long as they continue to do as they do. The individual worker, however, is not held down by the ignorance or the mental slothfulness of his class. He can follow the tide of opportunity to riches, and his book will tell him how. No one is kept in poverty by shortness of the supply of riches. There's more than enough for all. A palace as large as the capital at Washington might be built for every family on earth from the building material in the United States alone. Under intensive cultivation, this country would produce wool, cotton, silk, and linen enough to clothe each person finer than Solomon's glory. And plenty of food. The visible supply is practically inexhaustible, and the invisible supply really is inexhaustible. He says, everything you see on earth is made from one original substance out of which all things proceed. New forms are constantly being made, and all older ones are dissolving, but all are shapes assumed by one thing. The formless stuff is intelligent. It is stuff which thinks. It is alive and always impelled toward more life. It is a natural and inherent impulse of life to seek to live more. It is the nature of intelligence to enlarge itself, and of consciousness to seek to extend its boundaries and find fuller expression. You must get rid of the last vestige of the old idea that there is a deity whose will it is that you should be poor, or whose purposes may be served by keeping you in poverty. The intelligent substance which is all and in all and which lives in all and lives in you is a consciously living substance. Being a consciously living substance, it must have the nature and inherent desire of every living intelligence for increase of life. Every living thing must continually seek for the enlargement of its life, because life in the mere act of living must increase itself. And here's a bunch of reasons not to want to get rich. He does talk about you should think about what you want instead of what you don't want, otherwise you'll set up mental cross currents. The universe desires you to have everything you want to have. Nature is friendly to your plans. Everything is naturally for you. Make up your mind that this is true. It is essential, however, that your purpose should harmonize with the purpose that is in all. You must want real life, not mere pleasure of sensual gratification. Life is the performance of function, and the individual really lives only when he performs every function, physical, mental, and spiritual, of which he is capable, without excess in any. You do not want to get rich in order to live swinishly, or to enjoy mental pleasures, to get knowledge, to gratify ambition, to outshine others, to be famous. All these are a legitimate part of life, but the man who lives for the pleasure of the intellect alone will only have a partial life, and he will never be satisfied with his lot. You don't want to get rich solely for the good of others, to lose yourself for the salvation of mankind. The joys of the soul are only a part of life. They're no better and nobler than any other part. You want to get rich in order that you may see, eat, drink, and be merry when it is time to do those things, in order that you may surround yourself with beautiful things, see distant lands, feed your mind, and develop your intellect, in order that you may love men and do kind things, and to be able to play a good part in helping the world to find truth. But remember that extreme altruism is no better and no nobler than extreme selfishness. Both are mistakes. What God wants is that you should help to make the most of yourself, for yourself and for others, and you can help others more by making the most of yourself than in any other way. And he says later that what the poor need most is visions of wealth, setting an example of how to make yourself rich. You don't have to cheat, so forth. I'm a creator, not a competitor. Riches secured on the competitive plane are never satisfactory or permanent. They are yours today and someone else's tomorrow. Remember, if you're to become rich in a scientific and certain way, you must rise entirely out of the competitive thought. You must never think for a moment the supply is limited. Just as you begin to think that all the money is being quartered and controlled by bankers and others, and you must exert yourself to get lost, pass to stop this process, and so on, in that moment you drop into the competitive mind, and your power to cause creation is gone for the time being. And what is worse, you'll probably arrest the creative movement you've already instituted. So look at the visible supply. Look always at the limitless riches and formless substance, and know that they are coming to you as fast as you can receive and use them. Nobody, by cornering the visible supply, can prevent you from getting what is yours. So he goes through his formula again. There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made, and which, in its original state, permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the universe. A thought in this substance produces the thing that is imaged by the thought. Form things in his thought, and by impressing this thought upon formless substance, can cause the thing he thinks about to be created. So you do not have to drive sharp bargains, but this does not mean you don't have to drive any bargains at all. It means you do not have to deal unfairly. You don't have to get something for nothing, but you can give to every man more than you take from him. You can give more in use value than the cash value that you take. You need not hesitate to ask largely. Recall the case of one student who was told that he must get in mind a clear picture of the things he desired, so that the creative thought of them might be impressed on formless substance. He was a very poor man living in a rented house and having only what he earned from day to day, and he could not grasp the fact that all wealth was his. So, after thinking the matter over, he decided that he might reasonably ask for a new rug for the floor of his best room and an anthracite coal stove to heat the house during the cold weather. Following the instructions given in this book, he obtained these things in a few months, and then it dawned upon him that he had not asked for enough. He went through the house in which he lived and planned all the improvements he would like to make in it. He mentally added a bay window here and a room there until it was complete in his mind and his ideal home, and then he planned his furnishings. Holding the whole picture in his mind, he began living in a certain way and moving toward what he wanted, and he owns the house now, and he is rebuilding it after the form of his mental image. And now, with still larger faith, he is going on to get greater things. So he talks a lot about, he thinks very highly of gratitude to bring you into perfect unity of mind with God. First, you believe there's one intelligent substance for things which all things precede. Second, you believe that this substance gives you everything you desire. And third, you relate yourself to it by a feeling of deep and profound gratitude. Many people who order their lives rightly in all other ways are kept in poverty by their lack of gratitude. Having received one gift from God, they cut the wires which connect them with him by failing to make acknowledgement. So forth. The grateful outreaching of your mind in faithful praise to the Supreme is a liberation or expenditure of force. It cannot fail to reach that to which is it addressed, and the reaction is an instantaneous movement toward you. How to use the will. Set about getting rich in a scientific way, you do not try to apply your willpower to anything outside of yourself. You have no right to do so anyway. It is wrong to apply your will to other men and women in order to get them to do what you wish done. It is as flagrantly wrong to coerce people by mental power as it is to coerce them by physical power. I think he's talking about witchcraft. There might have been something more current then than it is now, because it's not... I don't know if there's any kind of current idea of controlling other people by mind power. Mm-hmm. If compelling people by physical force to do things reduces them to slavery, compelling them by mental means accomplishes exactly the same thing. The only difference is in methods. It is robbery either way. Okay. You have no right to use your willpower upon another person even for his own good, for you do not know what is his own good. The science of getting rich does not require you to apply power or force to any other person in any other way whatsoever. There is not the slightest necessity for doing so. Indeed, any attempt to use your will upon others will only defend and defeat your purpose. And then all more about what you don't do. To get rich, you only need to use your willpower upon yourself. When you know what to think and do, then you must use your will to compel yourself to think and do the right things. That is the legitimate use of the will in getting what you want, to use it in holding yourself to the right course. Use your will to keep yourself acting and thinking in a certain way. There's a whole bunch of do not. And the more steady and continuous your faith and purpose, the more rapidly you will get rich, because you will make only positive impressions upon substance, and you will not neutralize or offset them by negative impressions. The picture of your desires, held with faith and purpose, is taken up by the formless and permeates it to great distances throughout the universe, for all I know. As this impression spreads, all things are set moving towards its realization. Every living thing, every inanimate thing, and the things yet uncreated are stirred toward bringing into being that which you want.
Hey, Rod, I have to cut you off because we've got 30 seconds left.
Oh dear.
Thank you very much for popping on the show again. I'm going to call you tomorrow because we need the chat.
I thought it was quarter after. I got goofed.
It's all good. It's all good. So we're going to head out for the evening, you guys. I won't be here next week, but I will be here again the week after. So we're going to have a bunch of fun stuff to chat about with this Women's Festival. So thank you very much. And we'll catch you guys again next week. Bye-bye.